This is Now You Know, and today we are listening to an interview with Dr. Naomi Rose, who is the marine mammal scientist for the Animal Welfare Institute, located in Washington, D.C. She works on several campaigns and coalitions addressing problems associated with cetacean live capture, trade, and captivity, both in the U.S. and abroad. She has worked on 4 rehabilitation and release projects for cetacean over the years and is a member of the team advising Merlin Entertainment on its proposal to retire several dolphins to a seaside sanctuary in Europe. She is also the main author of the case against marine mammalian captivity.
Naomi, thank you so much for speaking to me today on the subject of cetacean captivity. I have been so fortunate because I've had the opportunity to listen to you speak on this on several occasions, and each time I come away having learned a whole bunch of new information and facts. You're just a wealth of information, and I really, really appreciate this, so thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy doing podcasts.
To begin with, I was wondering if you could just summarize why you think it is that people have such a special affinity for whales and dolphins. There's something about whales and dolphins that I think the average person just is captivated by. And in a way, I feel like when we speak on issues to do with cetaceans, it allows people to identify and empathize on a level that may not be possible with certain other species.
I'm not sure that last bit is true. I think certain other species may generate similar emotions in some people. I think what characteristics a non-human animal needs to inspire that sort of empathy and affinity is, one, obviously intelligence. We feel like we're just out of reach in terms of communicating with these species. Another is characteristics that we think of as either similar to us or even unique to us as human beings. And then we discover them in another species, like self-awareness or the ability to problem solve. And, you know, that inspires us to, you know, seek ourselves in these non-human animals. But with whales and dolphins, there is something extra that I do agree with you inspires even more fascination. And that's that they are in the water. And these are mammals that are living full-time, often below the surface of the water. And that is magical.
I'm wondering if you could just summarize for us some of the main reasons why their welfare is so compromised in captivity.
I think going back to what I said earlier about how they spend so much of their time below the surface, that is the primary thing we take away from them is the vast majority of their lives, which are indeed spent below the surface, out of our view. And of course, when we have them in captivity, the whole point is we want to see them. And so we take that away from them. You know, we give them crystal clear water right down to the bottom of the tank. And if they're in a sea pen, it's slightly different, but the vast majority of these animals are held in tanks. We give them shallow tanks so that they can't go below a certain point where even crystal clear water would start filtering out the light and they would become invisible to us. We give them very little horizontal distance to occupy because I think primarily because, one, they would go out of view far too often and we wouldn't be able to see them, but also because they're difficult to control and train and have perform if they're in a vast space. And so, in fact, we're seeking to control what the very thing that attracts us to them in the first place, which is this free spirit that exists in the ocean, and we put them in a box so that we can see them up close. And you know, just sort of aesthetically and in terms of empathy, that should bother us. But physically and biologically, it is going to harm them. They are not going to be able to thrive in a box.
And what do you feel? I know you were saying, and it is true, that some people can be inspired from seeing these animals in captive facilities. But what are your views on education when it comes to viewing whales and dolphins in captivity? Do you think that there is more miseducation happening than education? Are some captive facilities better than others?
They absolutely are miseducating more than educating. It's one of the reasons why I believe that they are part of the problem rather than part of the solution. This isn't necessarily true for all zoos and aquariums, but for marine mammal exhibits, because they cannot be presented in situ. You know, they cannot be presented in an exhibit that in any way remotely captures their natural habitat. And they cannot be exhibited in an enclosure that will allow them to express natural social structure, natural behavior, you know, natural social interactions, other than to an extremely limited degree. What are you learning? You know, you're certainly not learning what they're capable of. You know, you see them jump high and you see them do flips. And some of those things are actually not natural behaviors at all. They're exaggerations of some version of a natural behavior. But, you know, you get the impression they're rather spectacular animals. There's no doubt about it. But you don't actually see them in context. And if you don't see them in context, how can you, in fact, appreciate them? And so you start to get the impression that they're something other than what they really are, which is never helpful. And then you're often told by the facility itself that we're only here to educate you. We're only here to help these animals in the wild. We're all about conservation and research. And in fact, you go away thinking, okay, they're on the job and I don't have to worry about it. And in fact, there have been some social science studies that show that people leave dolphin or whale exhibit less inclined to be concerned about the conservation than they were before. You know, they're telling you that, for example, they're happy, which they may not be. In fact, they may be suffering, and they don't want you to know that because that's not going to make you come back or sell tickets either. And so they're actually misleading you, which again is why I think they're part of the problem and not part of the solution. And you come away thinking they're something that they're not. And what, for example, you come away thinking that they're these sort of magical, mystical creatures that, you know, a trainer can have a lovely bond with, as opposed to, you know, dolphins in the wild. They practice infanticide. They've been known to injure each other. They play with their food, which is kind of cruel. I mean, I'm not trying to say that they're dark species. They're not. They're just multifaceted. They're three-dimensional. They're not, you know, one-dimensional magical beings. And, you know, the industry often tells the NGO
that's exactly how they're marketed, isn't
it? Yeah, the nonprofit, they often accuse the nonprofit community, the animal protection community, that we're, you know, fantasizing these dolphins, that we're turning them into these magical creatures so that our constituencies will give us money and we can do our work. Well, I actually see it.
It is the opposite.
It's the other way around. The industry is the one who's turning them into anthropomorphic cartoon characters that everybody thinks are magical and from some mystical realm, you know, and, you know, you can have this magical bond with them if you become a trainer and so on. And so here's something everybody should keep in mind. And they certainly don't respond to us this way, but occasionally, especially familiarity breeds contempt, and they've injured more people in captivity than they ever have in the wild. And some people will say, oh, that's because they're in close proximity to us. And that's sort of my point. Yes, they are, because we force them to be. And so look how they respond. So, you know, these are animals that when they cooperate, and they do often cooperate, can kill sharks, right?
Right.
So why would you be swimming with them? And it's not like they're going to attack you that way, but these are animals that when they think about it, can kill sharks in cooperation with each other. Don't mess around with them. Don't treat them lightly. Don't think they're there for you. That's sort of how I would like people. I always tell people to look at it from the dolphin's point of view.
So how is the world doing now when it comes to awareness and changing this practice? Like, it seems that in certain countries we're doing well, and in other countries the problem seems to be getting much worse.
That is correct. In the West, we have had a Blackfish effect. Blackfish is the documentary that told us all about how Tilikum, a male orca at SeaWorld, killed his trainer, Don Brancho, in 2010, and his history and how this all came to be and sort of how these animals, especially orcas, you know, these large predators, suffer in captivity. And because of that documentary, and it's very rare for a documentary to have this kind of societal effect, the West has completely changed how it views these animals in captivity, and all sorts of changes, corporate, media, and legislative and regulatory have occurred in the last few years as a result of the film. The East has not yet had its Blackfish effect. And by the East, I mean most of Asia and Russia. And they simply have not had their Blackfish effect yet. You know, I mean, basically, this is a very old-fashioned concept in a very modern world. And what's perpetuating it at this point is ignorance in the East. And in the West, the desperation of a dying industry. They cannot, it's very strange to me how wedded to the concept of live animal exhibit the whale and dolphin community is. It's not, zoos and aquariums are actually modernizing with a little bit more flexibility. especially, for example, they're phasing out elephant exhibits and polar bear exhibits. And the mm-hmm. common denominator of the exhibits they're phasing out are large, wide-ranging species.
Actually, the interview that I'm doing with you now, it's part of a three-part series. We interviewed Rob Laidlaw Zuchek on polar bear captivity, and I interviewed Winnie Kiru on elephant captivity. And so, yeah, these species, it is interesting to see how zoos are coming around.
Right. And so they are recognizing that these large, wide-ranging species do not thrive in captivity. And the dolphinarium, as I call it, industry, the whales and dolphins exhibiting facilities often who specialize in those species are clinging on for dear life to this type of exhibition in a way that zoos and aquariums, which are more eclectic and have a greater variety of species that they exhibit, and they're recovering.
And if they just supported, if they only, you know, helped fund and supported sanctuaries for the animals they currently have, wouldn't they
Absolutely.
Be like these huge heroes and everybody
heroes.
Would want to go to their
Absolute parks? Heroes. And it's the last step that they won't take.
Hmm.
And I think it's because they realize if they do, it validates everything we've ever said for the last however long animal rights folks have been protesting this activity, which is pretty much from the beginning.
But do you think that day is coming? Do you think eventually?
It will. Here's the thing. One of the reasons we're pursuing sanctuaries, you know, whale and dolphin sanctuaries, you know, on the coast, which is a new concept. Sanctuaries are an old concept. There's sanctuaries for tigers, there's sanctuaries for bears, there's sanctuaries for primates, but there are no sanctuaries for whales or dolphins who are retired from performance. And so we're trying to pursue that. We're working on that. And I think several will be online sooner than later. As soon as the proof of concept is made, I think it's game over for the SeaWorlds of the world. They will realize they can't fight this anymore. The momentum is completely not in their favor. They have to bite the bullet and agree to sanctuaries, either to build their own, which is, I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. Let them do it themselves. I'm happy to work side by side with them on that. Or, you know, give their whales away to other sanctuaries. They're not going to be able to justify keeping these large, wide-ranging top predators of the ocean.
How do you feel about all of that encroaching kind of ecotourism following those
whales?
When
it's done responsibly, which I'm not saying it entirely is, when it's mm-hmm. done responsibly, I have no problem with it. But it is often done irresponsibly. And there is some very irresponsible whale watching going on in this
out there.
The population. There's also some very responsible whale watching going on. You have to, as a tourist, do your own homework. You have to make sure you're going with an operator who is going to be responsible. You have to find out what that means. And there's a lot of resources on the internet that can show you what responsible whale watching means. And then you have to find an operator that is following those guidelines or regulations and, you know, check out their reviews and say, you know, if you see a review that says, oh, they were found and they were crowding them, well, then don't go with that operator.
I usually just watch them from the land when I'm out west in
the
San Juan.
There's lots of places where you can do land-based whale watching. And if you can, you should.
Naomi, I can't thank you enough for doing this. You're honestly, such an incredible wealth of information. I have the highest respect for you. It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was fun to talk.
So, Jen, what did you think of the interview with Dr. Rose?
I loved the interview. I loved hearing you talk to Dr. Rose. As a future marine biologist and someone who's been involved in the captivity industry, cetaceans in captivity is a topic that I really, really enjoy.
It's close to both of our hearts.
Exactly. So for people who don't know, cetaceans is a taxonomic group composed of whales, dolphins, and porpoises. So I think one of the questions that you asked was really interesting. It was like, why are people so enthralled with them? And Dr. Rose answered it really well, I think, is basically that they possess characteristics that generate empathy and feelings of affinity.
But she also answered it in a really surprising way to me when she mentioned that the extra thing is that they're immersed in water.
Yeah, she's right. It's because we think as mammals as being land animals, right? It's like I still hear a lot of people today that are surprised when I tell them that dolphins are not fish, they're mammals. You know, they breastfeed their, they nurse their young, and, you know, they're mammals, but they live in waters. So if we take orcas as an example, who are the largest member of the dolphin family, and yes, orcas are dolphins for people who didn't know. And
they are also 7-year-old's favorite fact, animal fact.
Well, it is. And you'd be surprised. Most people are like, oh, you just said orca. Don't you mean dolphin? I'm like, they're actually the same thing. And they're also, as another fact, the apex predators of the sea. And nope, that's not the great white. So most people will tell me, oh, no, that must be great whites. And I'm like, no, actually, these are orcas.
Go orcas.
So like humans, their brains are highly developed in areas of social intelligence and self-awareness. They are capable of abstract thinking. They can also have culture. And what we mean by culture is specialized behavior that are taught to and learned by animals within a group. And that includes language, which is an area that I'm fascinated about. Their perception of the world is largely acoustic, which makes it a bit difficult for us and actually impossible for us to imagine what they see. We know dolphins use echolocation to create an impression of their world around them. These echolocation create pictures, and these pictures hold like a lot of information, including depth, which is why it's difficult for us to translate into flat images. We think they would be using some kind of sonopictorial language. So basically, it's like telepathy with images, which I think is really fascinating.
I've always been struck when I've heard Dr. Marino speak on this about how they have such a large neocortex, and that in some ways, they're quicker than humans. So
it's almost if they had, you know, how they have like a fourth dimension to them. It's like they're basically sending images to each other. Instead of, it's not even telepathy. It's like I'm sending you straight away what I'm thinking about with images.
Wow.
So you know how we say one image is worth 1,000 words? Mm-hmm. That's how I'm seeing it basically for dolphins in general. And that to me is fascinating. And yeah, I think it's, and you know, like in the wild, orcas live in tight family groups that are sophisticated. They have unique culture that is passed down to generation. And over the past few decades, researchers have described different forms and types of orcas, known as ecotypes. And these different types of orcas, different size, appearance, prey preferences, foraging techniques, behaviors, social groups, and dialects, so languages. And that reminds me of humans. It reminds me of us. If you go to North America from South America, we speak different languages. We eat different things. We look a bit different. Same thing if you go, you know, Northern Europe, Southern Europe, or, you know, Eastern Europe. So it's, the parallel to me is so striking. The orca is wide ranging. It's fast moving. It's deep diving. They're predators. In the wild, they can travel up to 225 kilometers in a day. That's 140 miles. They can reach speeds as high as 50 kilometers an hour. That's 30 miles an hour. And they can dive down to 1,000 meters. That's more than 3,000 feet deep. So that begs the question, why captivity? And like, first of all, why captivity is so wrong? So let's go back to the basic questions for people that haven't seen Blackfish or the Cove or are hearing about this topic for the first time. Why is it so wrong? So even if you keep all these facts in mind regarding how intelligent they are and just, you know, the type of environment they need to live in to be,
how
you know,
social they are.
First of all, they have tight family units that are completely destroyed when they're in captivity. They are social animals. And what we mean by social is that it's, and that's true for other animals as well. If I take myself for an example, let's say I'm a social animal.
Except perhaps the panda bear.
Perhaps the panda bear. But I mean, you know, it's true for many animals. I'm not saying every animal, right. But many animals are social animals. And if I go back to taking myself as an example, during the course of my life, I'll see a lot of people that I know regularly or less regularly, like family, colleagues, friends, the mailman, the lady at the dry cleaning, the pharmacist, my doctor. But I also see people that I don't know, and I might or might not see them again. But, you know, this changes every single day. So when we say social, it's not a question of just not shoving me in a little enclosure with five other members of my species, so other humans, and just saying like, here you go, you're social, here's five other individuals for you. And it's called a network. And in captivity, you destroy that network because, you know, it's important for me to see new faces every day. I think it's the same for like, and this, I have no idea if what I'm saying is right, but I guess child development, it's important for a child to see new faces. If it keeps seeing its mother and its parents basically every day, but no one else, I believe it's not good for a child. Like, you need to see new people, you need to experience new things, and captivity kind of destroys that.
I think another thing that we need to address here, just to play devil's advocate, is the whole idea that without these animals, I touched on it earlier, actually, as we've been talking, but that without these animals, scientific research would be limited and curbed, because that is an argument, a classic argument that a lot of these facilities that house whales and dolphins make. I just think, not only from a welfare point of view, which is what we're focusing on here, from a welfare point of view, a scientific point of view, from a science point of view, and also from an educational point of view, all of those arguments, they just don't hold up. And that's, so you and I can talk all day about, you know, how this is really unethical, how it's, you know, a welfare problem, but it's not even educational. It's not even contributing to science. It's certainly not helping conservation. So it's like what Naomi said, it's just time to, you know, these facilities have to let go.
Yeah, they have to let go. It's time to move into something else. And I'm going to quote Jacques Cousteau on that one.
Ooh.
There is about as much educational benefit to be gained in studying dolphins in captivity as there would be studying mankind by only observing prisoners held in solitary confinement.
So Jen, what is our message going to be then to present to our star?
So like she said in the interview, Dr. Rose mentioned that boycotts are not that effective. But I think what message we could send out is maybe ask people to help us reach out to, I'm going to say SeaWorld, but it's not just SeaWorld. There's other aquariums. I just want to mention that part. There's other aquariums that are part of this. It's just SeaWorld are the ones that keep the most whales in captivity from what I understand. So SeaWorld and others, if we could try their, you know, put pressure on them to accept that it's time to move to something else, and maybe they could be part of that change, like help us, you know, build a better future for those whales in captivity. I think we could ask, so Mr. Harry Styles basically had called out SeaWorld at one of his concerts in 2015, if I remember well, after seeing, he also tweeted seeing The Cove in 2012, so I know he's already a huge supporter of the Dolphin Project and just whales in captivity in general. So I think he'd be a good person to reach out to regarding this. And as a general message, I don't know, what do you think? What we could ask people to help us do?
But I definitely think the message that avoid facilities or don't go, just don't go to facilities that has whales or dolphins, or as she said, if you're going to go to a facility with whales and dolphins, express your displeasure with those exhibits. It's not the only thing we can do. I think it can be more effective to contact your local member of parliament, to write letters, and to really put pressure on governments to change laws. So facilities like this, because you might get a good CEO, a new progressive CEO like they had, I'm not sure if he's still there, at SeaWorld, but then other facilities can crop up that won't have that, and they just have dollar signs in their eyes. So I really think that the political pressure needs to, you know, be happening as well.
Whatever means people have to take, whether it's not going or just when you go, you do voice out that you're not happy with the fact that you're keeping these species. And also if we could ask them to, you know, make amends and try to find a solution with other organizations to see what we can do for the future. So rehabilitate and return him to the wild, perhaps. I don't know if that's something that is possible.
I think that's a very viable possibility for a lot of the animals. But if not even, just, you know, much, much better, like something like the Whale Sanctuary Project, enclosures that are part of the open ocean that are just much, much larger, deeper part of the natural ocean where they can echolocate with. Okay, so what's the next step? So you're going to take this forward to Harry. Do you have any way that we can actually reach him? Or is this just a complete long shot?
So I have met someone who could get through him. So basically, I will try to reach Mr. Styles and see if he can help us just, you know, send out that message about just dolphinariums in general, just not just SeaWorld, but in general. Also that right now there's a problem. We have time to talk about this in another episode, but back in East, so Russia and China, this is becoming popular. So we're seeing like a reverse effect of what's going on here. And Dr. Rose mentioned it.
So how about this? Something like, express your displeasure with facilities that house whales and dolphins.
Perfect. That summarizes. It's short, it's sweet, and I think it's going to be very easy to just send that as a message.
Amazing. Okay, let's do it.
Thank you so much.